I was working at Real Change newspaper as assistant editor, and I had a coworker who said, "Hey, have you heard about this vendor here? His name is Bryant Carlin. He goes out to the Olympic National Park with his camera and stays for a couple weeks at a time and takes these pictures. They're really pretty good."
I'm Gabriel Spitzer, it's Sound Effect, and this is Seattle journalist Rosette Royale.
So I thought, oh, great, I'll just interview him. Then that's easy to do. And then we have photos from his trips, and bam, bam, like that's a quick story. It's done, sold. So I set up a time to meet Bryant.
First, I'd just like to ask people for their name.
Bryant Carlin.
Bryant slept on top of a picnic table in Woodland Park. When it was warmer, he slept in the horseshoe pits. You know, there's an area where there are horseshoe pits there.
You described yourself as a, was it a visual immersion photographer?
You know, he's
Wilderness
got this
immersion.
urban existence, homelessness, alcoholism. He is a drinker of malt liquors. One of those cans is about three cans of beer. So Bryant can drink two, three, four, five of them a day. Every day. And then he's got this outdoor existence where he's this fantastic outdoorsman, wild man, weeks alone with a camera.
I usually take no less than 2 weeks in a single location.
His photos tell these amazing, beautiful stories of this world that is so close to us. And so I was really impressed with his ability to take pictures.
And I pretty much just relax into the wilderness and let it unfold in front of me.
I
I
asked him, of
generally
course,
don't
how did you
have
wind
an
up doing
agenda.
this? What led you
Once
to
I'm
go to the
set,
Olympics?
I kind of let the
And
weather
he
dictate the
kind
direction.
of got quiet for a few seconds. And then he told me how he was living in Alabama.
93, it was my 23rd, 22nd, doesn't matter. It was one of my birthdays. I went down to Florida. I got in trouble for DUI. And I was sitting in jail in Florida, and the library in the jail in Florida had an Alaska magazine. And I was like, man, I gotta do something else with my life. And I just decided I was gonna go to Alaska and be a photographer.
And then 6 months later,
And
he
I
moved
came to
from
Seattle,
Alabama
headed to
to the
Alaska.
Northwest. And he had a coworker, and the coworker said, "Why are you going to go to Alaska? You can just go to Olympic National Park. It's just a couple hours away." And Bryant went to the park and fell in love. And so ran the interview in the paper, and then I just kind of got caught up in work. And I would run into Bryant every, I don't know, 2 or 3 months. And he would say, "Hey, you want to go out to the Olympics with me? You know, I'm going out in a couple weeks. The elk will be bugling. Or, you know, the wildflowers are just going to be blooming." Every time he asked me, I had a great excuse. "Oh, I'm too busy with work. Oh, I'm going out of town that weekend." And so they were all kind of little lies because I didn't really want to go. I was just terrified. I don't know how to camp. I'm not a camper. I don't want to backpack for 10 days. And that's what Bryant does. And so it was intimidating to me. And then one time he said to me again, "Hey, I'm going out to the woods. Do you want to come with me? I think it'll be great. We can stay out there, you know, maybe for like a week." And I was about to say no. And we were in the office downtown in Pioneer Square. And I looked out the window, and, you know, it was this urban street, construction vehicles. Some guy ran in an alleyway and was taking a hit off of a pipe. And I thought, here is this man who has been inviting me out to a place that is so different from the world that I see every day. And why do I keep saying no? And what would happen to me if I said yes? So I said, sure. And, you know, that yes totally changed my life.
Rosette had no idea that this relationship would stretch on for years and would push him way outside of his comfort zone. That feeling of being in the wrong place, of being a fish out of water, that's what our show is about today. We are going to continue with Rosette's story now about two people who struggle in very different ways to adapt to their environment.
Well, I borrowed a friend's tent and packed up and picked up Bryant and Woodland Park, and, you know, we drove out and started hiking in.
The elk trails to me are the key to finding some of the most unique and pristine areas in this park.
Bryant walks so fast on the trail. And so that sometimes meant that he would turn a corner and I wouldn't see him. And the backpack I had on, I didn't know how to put it on, so it kept hitting me in the back of the head, so I couldn't really look forward. I could only look at my feet. So it was horrible. I was miserable. I was so miserable. I'm black, and my whole life, my family has always told me, like, black people don't go camping. You're going to get killed out there, boy. That is crazy. Don't go do that. But I realized that I had absorbed this whole fear of the wilderness that my whole family and all the black people I knew all had. In the city, I know what bus to take. I can figure out how to get somewhere. But out in the wilderness, like, I don't know how to read the land. I was clueless, totally clueless. I was in Bryant's territory. We would be walking through the woods and he would just turn off the trail and he'd go start walking. I'm like, where are you going? He's like, I'm following the elk trail. And I'm like, what elk trail? He's like, we're standing on the elk trail, look. And I would look down and I realized that we were standing in this little trail, which I hadn't noticed. And he could be so calm. You know, we'd have these moments where we would sit by the river and he would just sit there and I would look at him and he would seem so at peace.
I love humanity, but I also love the variety and beauty of the life of this world. The song of the wren, the bugles of the elk.
And then Bryant decided that he was going to go on a little solo journey himself. And so he left me alone. And I was just terrified, so terrified that something bad was going to happen to me. And I couldn't look at anything. And so I was sitting there next to this tree and I heard this sound, this zzz, but it was really loud. And I look and there is this hummingbird that is just fluttering in the air, like looking right at me. You know, it must have hung out for like 30, 45 seconds. And then the hummingbird left and I thought, what am I doing? I am terrified of a hummingbird. So I kind of just thought, you know what? You got to let it go. You're out here in this place. It's beautiful. Try to see what's out here and stop living in your head and live in the moment. You know, who knows why things happen? Who knows why people come together, right? But I realized that in some way, Bryant was the agent that helped me become more comfortable in the wilderness, the place that terrified me, that I didn't understand. And so when we got back from our trip, we found out shortly after that there was a fire in Olympic National Park. And so this motivated Bryant even more. He was going to go to the park and document it, and he was going to be in the woods for 6 months. I thought that was a little much. But Bryant was really gung-ho about it. He said he knew what to do. He had his camera. He was going to document it. And he was going to make this record of a drought and a rainforest, which, of course, seemed ironic to him. So here it is. It's June 2015. It's July 2015. Bryant says, I'm going to go out. Still hasn't gone out. August 2015. Fire's still going. Bryant says he wants to go out, but he hasn't gone. Then it's September 2015, fire is still smoldering, Bryant hasn't made it. Why hasn't Bryant made it? He's been on a drinking binge, so he hasn't been able to get out there. So finally, in mid-September 2015, I'm like, Bryant, listen, if you really want to go out there, I will go out there, let's go. We finally go out there, but we couldn't go farther up the trail because the trail was closed because of the fire. This frustrated Bryant.
Turn around, it's something else.
And also, Bryant had gone cold turkey and he was having the DTs. So he was shaking, he was sweating, he was a mess. He was a total mess.
I want to get off of the f***ing alcohol for good.
I thought, is this what I'm going to have to go through for the next 6-7 days? Is to listen to someone yell and cry and scream every 15 minutes?
You get a ticket to eternity in hell!
And the last day we were there, we were walking up the trail, and walking down the trail comes the chief fire management officer of Olympic National Park, who had opened up the trail. So Brian's like, we're going to go. So we like stormed 7 miles up trail, and we get to this place where we could see where the fire was, and it was so completely anticlimactic. I mean, it was just sort of this brown spot in the green wilderness, and there was a little wisp of smoke. So it was just this trip that for Bryant was really frustrating. For me, it was liberating. It was so beautiful. I'd never heard bugling elk before. It was a stunning, unearthly sound. We had this one encounter where this giant bull elk walked across the trail as we were walking back to our camp. And I mean, the animal was massive. I'd never seen an animal that big, that close. So it was incredible. And I was just pointing out to Brian all these beautiful moments we had had on this trip. But to him, it was just frustration. Because to him, it was the opportunity to change his life. He thought, if I can document this, people will listen to me and pay attention to me. And then I'll be taken for real and I'll be serious. And I'm going to be a different person. And my life's going to change. But that's not how it went. You know, Bryant had to go back to the streets. So there it is. It's October 2015, November, December. Bryant can't let go of this idea of 6 months. He really wants to do it. Finally, he's like, you know, I'm going to start in January of 2016. And I'm like, January? Brian, it's freezing. He said, oh, it's not that bad. I mean, I sleep outside in the city. It's not that much colder in the park out there. So this time we decided to go to the Hoh Rainforest. We left the first week of January 2016. And, you know, I'd spent those several days, and then Brian was going to start his journey, his 6 months. And so I got in the van and drove away and left him there. And we had planned to meet up in 6 weeks. So we met up, and then I'm planning to go back to the city, and he goes, you know what? I think I'm going to leave, and I'm going to go back to the city with you. And I'm like, really? What about your 6 months? He said, well, I got to get a permit, and, you know, I can just come back in a week or two once I get the permit. So we came back to the city, and then I found out why we came back to the city.
So did you have something to drink when you went to Forks one time?
Yeah, I did.
Brian admitted that he had hitchhiked out and gotten some beers.
How many? Just one?
Three.
And had gotten drunk.
Well,
and he was embarrassed to tell me. And then he didn't go back. And I was like, Brian, what's going on? He said, well, you know, when I was out there that time and I'd been drinking, I actually had an altercation. I said, what do you mean, an altercation? He said, well, I had an altercation with the ranger. She was asking me some questions, and she took me in her office, and I got loud and got belligerent, and then she handcuffed me, and then she drove me to the police station in Forks, and they kept me overnight. I was like, Bryant? And now he had to go to court. So I drove him to court. And I don't know how it happened, but he had the nicest magistrate in the world.
So it's Wednesday, May 4th. Brian, you just had your little Raymond. How do you think it all went?
Actually, I feel it went far better than how I thought it would go when I first got in trouble.
He was so nice to Brian. The judge talked to him for a little bit and said, you know what, I realize that you do better off in the woods than you do in the city, so let's get you out of court and let's get you back into the woods. Fine, Bryant, $235. That was it. It was such a blessing. I couldn't believe that he'd gotten off that easy. You know, there I was. It was the summer of 2016, and Bryant still hadn't gone back out into the woods to do his 6 months. And then I saw that his dream was slipping away. And I thought, well, what am I going to do? I can't save it for him, but maybe I can try to help him one more time. And I'm like, Bryant, listen, if you want to go, like, you know what? Come on, let's go. Like, I'll totally take you. And so we went out again in August 2016. And he was like, okay, I'm going to stay out here. And I'm going to be out here. And I'm going to really do it. And then 5 weeks later, I got a phone call. And it was Bryant saying that he was coming back to the city. And that was pretty much the last time he went back to the woods. So that was heartbreaking. I just saw how important the woods were to him. What joy and beauty had done for his life. And it was sad to know that this man who had shown me that joy and that beauty couldn't find his way back out there to experience it again himself. And I still hope that he can reach it one day. But I know as the days go on and as he gets older, that it becomes harder and harder and harder. But also the thing that happened was that I realized that I could do something that I didn't think that I could do. And so I decided, you know what? I'm going to go on a solo journey. And so I took a solo trip and I went out by myself and went 7-8 miles up the trail and put my tent out. And then the next 2 days, I didn't see a person. And I realized I never had a time where I hadn't seen someone for 2 days.
It is, what is it, like the 14th of September? And I did it. Time just seemed like it was turned to syrup. It just took for, not forever, it was just slow. And it was so
it was
nice. It didn't rain.
Like three of the best days of my life. So, this man who had taken these solo journeys, who kept inviting me to go, led me to go on my own solo journey. And my whole life changed. One time when we were out in the woods, he said to me, "You know what? I want my story to have a happy ending." And I said, "Bryant, you know what? I do too." I said, "But you know, maybe your story will be bittersweet. And maybe there's a lot for everyone else in the story of someone who has a bittersweet tale."